Welcome to Rivcast, a Civilization podcast focused on its console platforms.
El Thrasher?
Scotty X.
Japanese.
Hello everybody, welcome to the latest Rivcast. Got JP Kinese and It's here, and myself of course, Scotty X. Today we'll start off with the tournament summary. So we've got a new tournament that we've just started up, which involves me and Grohitz here. It's started off pretty well.
2-1, I guess. It's not bad.
Against the old veteran Mobpop.
Yep.
Yeah.
World champion.
Yeah.
Got one up on him, so I've started off all right. I got a 2-1 against good old Multi, the champion from the previous tournament, so both doing all right.
Both of y'all went 2-1 against him?
I went 1-2 against him.
Marty's been playing some good Civ.
But out of the four of the last six games, he got 7 cities of gold and Finger Watt. And those are the two that I lost.
That was a hard to lose.
Yeah. I still could have won that one, but I got horseback riding from Spain on the island.
Ah, yes, yes. I saw that right up.
They tacked horseback riding on the island. I thought he sold it to them. He was Zulu. I spent all that time teching and get galley drive. I spent all that time teching ironworking, and I get it, and I take him out, and I get horseback riding. And I didn't get any capitals or anything, but if I could have got navigation, I'm pretty sure I would have won.
I don't think you can stop America with...
Well, I mean, he has Fundy and Zulu overrun, so he could have done something, but I'm pretty sure I would have won.
Yeah, that's true, because if he would have got, you know, some catapults or some knights, then he can overrun a lot of stuff. But, Scotty, tell them how the setup for this new tournament. First of all, this tournament is, there's not one easy win in this tournament. I mean, there's been very talented tournaments in the past, but this tournament is full of...
In my opinion, this is the tournament where there's not a single easy game in it. Normally, it's really hard to get a squad of people who are all, like, what we'd all consider the top tier. But this one, every one of them are top tier, so it's going to be a pretty tough tournament for whoever wins it. So it's basically round robin, and we'll play each other, and then the top four go into the knockouts.
Every player has to play 3 games against every other player. 7 players in the tournament, so you'll have to play 18 games before you get into the playoffs.
Probably like 9 points or so get you in half. If you get about half, then you should be in.
Yeah, if you're batting 50% against this tough crowd, then you're doing pretty good. It's in it, Scotty in it, you got Multi, you got Point. Point, he hasn't really joined many tournaments, but he's well known to be a very good player. The Nakamichi guy, one knows who he is. And then Remo is also known, elite player, yes. Whoever wins this is going to have a nice trophy to put on their mantle.
Yep.
I'll give you guys an update on a tournament on PS3 side. We did a triple elimination tournament. Mopak was in it, Scotty was in it, me, Terminator... Zona was in it, and a couple other good players. Right now, it's only 3 of us left. Me, Zona, and Terminator. And I have 1 loss. It's a triple elimination tournament. So you play until you lose 3 games, and then you're at the tournament. I have 1 loss, and the other 2 players, Zona and Terminator, have 2 losses. So I'm in good position to maybe win 3 in a row. So that'll be nice.
Yep, and credit for C for winning the last one on the Xbox.
First tournament he won.
He's been playing quite well lately. He's got a few wins under his belt against various good players, so give us a watch for that.
To the elite player, they probably already know this, but to the player that's trying to get to the elite level, you got to attack your opponent. And often, the elite player uses legions because they're cheap and they're effective. You can build a lot of them early, and a lot of times, since they only have 1 movement, you transport them by galley. Let's say I'm playing Scotty. I see he's stuck on 4 techs. I look at the tech tree. I know that he has iron working. I know what he's doing. He's been on Fortex for a while. He's putting together a Legion, bro. I mean, it's no question what he's doing. He's going to bring a bunch of Legions over, and he's probably going to bring them by galley. Now, if I can get to navigation before he comes over, I can sink that galley and really put a thorn in his game. It's almost a win for me. Basically, if he has a galley with 6 or 7 Legion armies on it and they go down in the deep ocean, I got a big advantage. So a lot of players that you see playing on high level will bring a galley fleet. Usually if you play with America, you'll see a galley fleet, but players that I've been playing lately, they'll put together a galley fleet without America. If you're going to bring that big army and you're playing against a good player, they're going to be expecting it. So you have to be very careful, because if you lose it...
Not very often do you have enough money to make a vet galley fleet, though. It's 150 hammers worth of stuff, and that's just for the galleys. That's no units, so that's not including the legions and stuff you have to build. The barracks is 40.
The cheapest strategy, I guess, is to lead with your empty galley and follow with full one. Would you be thinking of doing that, or would you tend to just go, well, I guess if I bump into something, then I'll just try and unload as fast as I can and try my luck?
Usually I try to make sure that the path I'm going is clear. So I notice that you and Mopfok risk a lot on galleys and stuff. I do that if I'm really desperate, but I rarely go into an area with a galley full of stuff that I have no idea if you have a galley over there or not. So usually I would have 2 galleys or my 1 galley, and I'd unload my militia in the area that I'm going to. So I know if, like, 3 or 4 turns ahead of time if your galley's going to be there or not. And if your galley's there, then obviously I'll go over there and try to win 1-1 before I have anything. And if not, I'll probably just start marching my legions and archers over towards their closest city or something if my galley doesn't make it or whatever.
This is what you have to consider. You have to either march your legions over. You could, if you're working all gold and hammers, maybe you could build a settler close to him and build a long road and get your legions over there.
Yeah, I like doing that too.
Build a galley fleet, which is very expensive, as Denard just said. You could build 2 galleys. Have one leading. That's your suicide galley. And you have one behind it. Scout the area. Make sure you don't just run it out there blindly and lose it, and then the game's lost because you just lost your whole army.
I've noticed that's never happened to me. I've seen it happen to Morty, and I've seen it happen to Scotty and Mopfok a few times, and I guess they're just bigger risk takers than me. Like, I never like risking it. That, I mean, the whole game is right there on that tiny little galley, or I always like to have a scout, even if it's just a warrior or an archer. At least I have an extra turn to see the galley coming or something, so I know to unload before we fight or something like that.
One of the things that I think Mopfok and I might quite like about the galley fleet is that if you're popping along there with the galley fleet and you bump into the other guy, it does cost you the full 90 hammers, but if you catch 30 back again, then you've actually for a third of your galley fleet already whilst it's still keeping on going.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's not quite as bad as it looks, because that's actually quite likely, but at the same time, I mean, it has a good point with scouting, and quite possibly Warbork and I should be considering that more.
Sometimes you have to take that chance to win the game. You're behind, or...
Yeah, I mean, I've done that when I was, like, way behind, yeah.
But often, if you have enough time to build 6 Legion armies and a couple of galleys, and you're not out of the game yet, you probably wasn't out of the game when you first started building those, honestly.
There are some games, though, like maybe you're a weaker civ, you know the other ones, some civ that's significantly better than yours later on, English or something, or maybe the Indians, and you're the Russians or something. And you know that at some point in this game, the other guy's really going to take you apart if you just let him be, and maybe he's got some continents and better access to the land and things. So there are games where you kind of have to tell you've lost this unless the game ends relatively soon, even though you may have a fair amount of resources. Like how in a tournament game I had versus Hits, where he had me shut off into a little section of the continent, as it happens, by a great war, which made it worse. But you could sort of tell that even though I had a decent start, things were just not going to work out for me unless I could make something of it, and in the end, I wasn't able to.
But that was your only shot at winning.
Yeah, but build up some units and then to have an attack at them is the sort of thing that you would do, because you go, otherwise I'm screwed.
Right, right. So you might as well go out fighting. I mean, why not? Yeah. So what do you think about knights? Do you like to attack with knights? Do you like to use knights?
Yeah, it's kind of, I don't know, it's hit and miss. I used to like knights a lot, but they're easily countered. you counter with legions. The good thing about knights is that you can hit cities out kind of away or a little too far away from the empire and take those cities. But, like, if you go for the core of their cities where they could get a bulk of defense or something too, then it could be real dangerous. Knights are risky like that. Yeah, it kind of depends on the map for knights and the tech. And if you think you can't out-tech them, then you need to try to get a couple cities real quick that might be undefended. The knights would probably be best. But other than that, I don't really care for them too much.
Yeah, I really want to get that. You know, the mess goes on to navigation, and the navigation is what I'm going to do a lot of the damage with.
Yeah, it depends how quick the knights come, really. That's.
I mean, if you've got mass and navigation anyway, then going down the knights route is kind of, you know, you've already got that at that strength of attack.
Yeah, once you have navigation and catapults, so no point, yeah.
And the other good thing about the catapults is the catapults don't walk forward when they kill the unit that's sitting in front.
Yeah, they don't get injured either. But it's really map-dependent. Like, if there's, like, lots of oceans and tons of island cities, then, yeah, you definitely want to go knights and catapults. But if they got cities spread out, the mainland, and for long distance, knights would probably be the best option. If you could get a couple knight armies, split them up, and then hit the cities that are far away, then they'll probably be pretty successful.
Yeah, so it's going to be quite often, your knights are going to outrun your defense, and so your knights turn up at their city, they attack once and get injured, and then you're exposed to a counterattack. For them to have an archer up and a couple of legions or something, or two legions become three when you build your extra one.
Well, yeah, you got to hit a city that is unlikely to have enough. That's why you kind of got to go for the unexpected city.
Yeah, you kind of jump around a bit, yeah.
Yeah, there'll be cities that they'll expect, so you can't try to go for those. So you got to go maybe unload them on a galley or something and then sneak behind them and then hit one of those cities, which will only probably have one unit in it.
The sneaking behind the opponent and going for the unexpected cities is a must against the good players, because you're not going to just come at them head on to their main cities and take their cities. They're going to have counters ready, and they're going to just chop your army down unless you have a veteran pike armies to defend or something, which could happen. Sneaking behind and getting those cities that are exposed behind his empire, if he expanded to some kind of smallish island where he has four or five cities on that island and you can get an army over there and take off four or five of those cities, those type of things are game changers. So
even if you can drop a horse in the middle of them and he has to put its unit in every single one of them, then you're away with just enough to scare him and make him waste a whole bunch of resources when he's gone over that whatever 14 ticks or over.
That's true. That reminds me of a game I played against Marplug one time. I took his cap, but he had got AOC, so he flipped the cap. And it was a single knight that I took his cap with. He ended up getting navigation while I was doing all gold trying to build knights so I could take some of his cities. He dropped that one knight off on this island I had that had like five cities on it and turned the entire game around with that one knight. It was crazy.
I remember a classic game I had versus Morpork. He was down on some. I was sailing around the outside with a galley, which it might have been empty or it might have had a unit or something on it, but I was sailing around the outside. He was busily building some units there, trying to block me from landing because he thought that I was going to land a whole ton of units there. And just the sheer amount of resources he must have thrown into rushing all of these units. And eventually he just called the game because I didn't even have to do anything.
Right, because, I mean, just spending 20 gold or whatever he had to spend to rush an archer here, an archer there, that cost a lot.
Yeah, in the meantime, I'm doing my thing.
Yeah, that's why it's best to admit to have a galley. But he must have not had enough money to get a galley earlier or something like that, and he just needed to rush units in the cities. That's probably what it was, because, I mean, the best way is just to have the galley. I mean, then you don't have to worry about it. Once you have that, then you're good.
But the trick about, I mean, this is one of the things that I first saw Morpork do a lot of. You have your galley come around the front, and he attacks the city or something, and you start rushing units there. And then he sneaks another one around the back at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And the one in the back has the real attack force in it. That's the,
yeah.
That's a great move. I love to do that.
It's so funny. I played Mopox so much that pretty much, like, we do the same moves with the galleys and stuff. A year ago, I wouldn't even have bothered, like, nobody's going to spend 10 turns going around this mainland to come around here. It'll take too long. I'm not worried about that. But now, we'll both rush Galia first place. Like, we'll both meet each other at the most useless point of the map. It's so funny. Like, we'll just rush to Galia and, what are you doing here? I don't know. What are you doing here? And we'll both unload, like, all our units. And we'll, okay. Here we go.
They underrush galleys, so you've got a galley, and you go and you find that there's a certain number of artifacts out there, you know, enough to make it worth having a bit of a look around. So you rush a galley in one direction, but quite often you should really be rushing the other one to go in the other direction.
Well, it depends how many islands you see next to you. It depends on the map.
You and probably Morpork do this quite a bit, probably more than at least some of the other guys do. And, you know, quite often it'll turn out that you'll go and you'll find your fact, or if not, you'll be carrying a unit or something and popping it down in the back of the other guy's empire.
Even if it's not for that, it's just to block off the other point. If there's two ways for them to access cities, then you got to block.
Yeah, that really tells you how far away they are, and it gives you a chance to kill them if they come with a bunch of units.
Yeah. You just go to the choke point, just leave it there, and then wait for him coming if you have the lead, you know what I mean? Dude, I do this all the time. Like, if I have the lead and I have the mainland choked off, I'll be like, okay, well, there's only 2 points for him to come by. I'll rush a galley on both sides. If I have the lead, he has to attack me, then I'm just going to leave those galleys there. And then if he kills it, okay, then I got a few turns before he's coming, and then maybe I'll rush another galley and try to win 1-1. And if not, then okay, then, you know, I won it, and then it's fine. If I don't have the lead, I got to try to get past them.
Well, they can be pretty effective. They bring the galley along, you come up, and then they unload some legions there, let's say, and you kill that galley, and suddenly they've got a pile of legions in the middle of nowhere that have to walk one square per turn towards you.
Man, they could change the outcome of the whole entire game, those galley battles.
Yep.
Yeah.
They don't have anything to do with karma either. You can lose 6 galley battles in a row.
Oh, yeah. I'm pretty sure I've lost 6 in a row. I'm almost positive I have.
It kind of just infuriates me when I lose 3 or 4 in a row, and I just want to do it again. I want to build another galley and fight it again.
If you lose 3-1 and then lose 1, does that count as 4 in a row, or does that just count 2 in a row?
You can lose 3-1 so easy with boats.
This is something which has confused me a little bit, that it looks like with the galleys that you don't get karma. So karma, for anyone who doesn't know, is that if you win one even battle, you're likely to lose the next even battle. It's sort of a little bit of fairness that Sid Meier and his guys put into the game. But galleys, it seems to not apply for some reason, and it's not entirely clear why that is. But later on, it looks like, in my opinion, when you get round to your cruisers, that it starts applying again. Or at least at some stage later on in the game, it seems to apply. Get a cruiser versus cruiser and you lose, and then you attack it again and then you win. I've had that sort of late game stuff where it really did look like it was going one either way.
I lost 3 cruiser fleets in a row to Prey one time. But, I mean, he had 31.5. That was when I was trying to get my naval support that I brought that up because I had moved to every square and didn't get my naval support. So I made 3 vet cruiser fleets and then he killed all 3 of them.
Was it all on the same turn?
The same game. I don't know. Yeah.
So it applies if the battles are straight after each other, but if there are other battles in between, then obviously not.
I think it was 1 battle, and then I did another battle. I think it was 3 turns consecutively. Can't remember exactly. It was a while ago. I remember 2 of them were back-to-back. But, I mean, he had a small lead, but for that to win, a bunch of times that loses just right off the bat. So it's kind of, I mean, to lose 3 in a row is pretty bad.
So there's something funny going on there. It'd be interesting to thresh that out. Like once me and Thresher and Duke were going through the knight battles versus archers to figure out the relationship there and the odds of winning. If anybody's forgotten about that one, which we mentioned in the previous RevCast, it's basically that when your archer has 4 defense and your knight has 4 attack, the archer is actually more likely to win because he's got 3 hit points. But I mean, it would be interesting to do some testing on that. Maybe we'll be able to talk on a later stage.
It seems that the naval bonus is pretty random. Like, everybody's seen it, but we don't know how to copy it. Like, maybe I've tried open ocean, I've tried to the shore, and I don't see it. And then whenever I don't need it, like, I'll see, oh, you get plus 13 defense or attack to your cruiser fleet. And I'm like, oh, okay, that's nice. I wish I knew how to replicate that.
Right, and a lot of players don't actually take advantage of that anyway because it's hard to get 2 cruiser fleets go up and going unless you have like a ton of money. And
but once you get in the late game, it could happen. It happens semi-frequently. I mean, it's hard, but it happens semi-frequently. It would be nice if you could count on it, though. Like, if you have an advantage of waiting to get another cruiser fleet, so, like, instead of going across the ocean with your cruiser fleet and then hoping to win the even battle, if you gain an advantage by waiting, making another cruiser fleet, and then sending them together so they both have a naval bonus.
Yeah, you might actually start doing it.
Yeah, that would add a strategic layer, but since there's absolutely no way, or at least so far, it's kind of a shot in the dark if you get it or you don't.
Most of the time you don't.
People would even just send one single cruiser with their cruiser fleet just to get that small bonus, you know?
Yeah, and sometimes you do get the bonus with just one cruiser. I've seen it before, too.
Well, have you done it with England where you had two cruisers and you actually get the double naval support?
If I have, I haven't noticed it. I don't think I have. Usually one cruiser fleet or one battleship fleet is more than enough.
Rome versus Egypt. Do y'all take Rome in that every time? Of course, and if Egypt doesn't have Colossus, though.
Yeah, I take Rome every time, pretty much.
Rome messes with Egypt's desert bonus as well, so I probably like Egypt maybe more than a lot of people because that extra culture bonus you get from your having your wonder.
I'll tell you, though, that the Oracle is a big deal. If you're playing against a high-level player that has the Oracle, and of course if the Arabs aren't on the board, it makes a big difference.
Interesting thing to think of in there. Maybe some other people, and probably the guys on the phones, I guess, probably get this sort of issue, where the Oracle gives you this thing, which I call the red X. Red X over the thing you're trying to attack, and if it's your first barb or it's your first AI capital, basically you've lost.
I've played enough that I'd rather have Stonehenge than Oracle, to be honest.
No way. No way. Stonehenge over Oracle, no way.
No, the only time the Oracle has helped me is early on with the horse army and you're attacking AI or something with like 9-5, and then it might save you from losing 9-5 or something like that. But other than that, I hate the Oracle. It's so unreliable.
If there was no Red X, things like going hard for these 50-50 battles in order to get elite units and stuff like this, I could start doing things there.
I haven't even had a Red X.
You can't even initiate a fight with anyone.
I basically have the Red X, but it's worse because it lets you attack, but it won't let you win. Like, you get in a thing where you can't win a battle unless it's an overrun battle. It's happened to me, like, over 5 times. So that's why I just want Stonehenge.
Yeah, that's happened to me twice. One time it lost me a game. I was sitting outside the city with two cat armies, and he had one single pikeman in there. I had cat armies on a hill with some naval support, and I attacked him for, like, 10 turns straight. And every time they said, you can't do it. You can't do this battle. You're going to lose.
You know what I'd be curious about? If you can even win an overrun whenever you're locked like that. Say if you lose, like, 10 attacks. So say you have two catapult armies and you lose 10 attacks, like 24 to 6. Okay, you could pretty much guarantee that you are locked, that you're not going to win any battles till it's obsoleted. I think maybe if they attack you, I don't know, I haven't noticed it, but usually they don't bother attacking you when they see you try attacking them like 20 times and nothing happened. Like, oh, I don't need to do anything. I'll just sit here and let them try to attack me 24-6 or whatever it is.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you're attacking against the odds, though, it might make it worse, but I don't know. You're attacking with the odds, eh?
There was one time where I was starting on an island as Egypt, and I got Oracle against Zulu. For about 20 turns, about 5 times a turn, I had 5 Legion armies and, like, a horse army with Blitz. So it was about 6 times a turn. I tried attacking 9-12. I didn't win any of them.
I think it might be related to the karma situation. And basically what's happened is that you've got onto this thing where you've got a 1, and, you know, you need a 1 to whatever it is, 1 to 4 or something to win. And it's just not switching off of those odds. You need to find that battle where you've got 4-1 or something, let's say, and win it in order for you to be with this different set of karma. Probably what you need is to find a horse army, go find a hut, and do an overrun on it or something like that.
I've had it locked up after I've done overrun on barbs and stuff.
Okay, maybe not then.
And then he got some tech. He didn't get religion yet, but he got something, and he hadn't attacked me. And then I win like 9-12 finally after about, I don't know, what, 6 times 20, like 120 Yeah, battles of me losing, apparently, according to the Oracle. I win 9-12, and then two turns later, he builds Oxford for bombers. I'm like, okay, that's fun. And then one time, I'm on a hill with the catapult army, and he's sitting on my desert with two catapult armies, and he's sitting on my desert with the archer army. So it's like 24-18, and I try attacking twice per turn with each catapult army for like 5-10 turns, and I couldn't win any one of them.
If I attack a couple of times and it refuses me, I just give up on that because I'm like, okay, I know that all these ones aren't going to work. And then my next thing is I go off and try and find something else to attack or whatever. And then eventually that happens and then I go have another go at it. But maybe your experience might have something to do with continuing to try and to do it when it was never going to work.
That goes to the whole point of me hating the Oracle.
Yeah.
It's like, give me Stonehenge, I don't have to worry about that crap.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you're right, Scott. That's happened to me twice, and both times I was so frustrated that it was happening that I just kept trying to attack that exact spot. I just kept trying to attack it every time.
Yeah, I mean,
instead of going to another place and trying to attack someone else, I was just so pissed. I was like, come on, the 20th time is not going to win. Come on.
It might even help just giving it a few turns and not attacking it, but attacking it every time I know is guaranteed.
Try that as well.
Just like you guys, if you just keep attacking it, you are, like, absolutely going to get 120, not wins.
Give me Stonehenge. Don't have to worry about that. Maybe I get Ark of the Covenant. I get some good bonuses. I'm fine with that.
Stonehenge has actually won me a few games.
It won my pocket game, too. That was so funny.
When you go through, you get a temple or something, you get that culture guy a little early, and it turns out to be a GS, and it's like invention, steam power, see you later.
Yeah. He got Stonehenge and got like Ark of Covenant with four cities, dude. He just demolished me. I mean, it was close, but I mean, he ended up getting way too far ahead with four cities. But his culture was just ridiculous.
Getting a GS with literacy and ironworking, and then with enough tech to tech jump to invention, that is just huge. You can go from being way behind the other guy to being at your mercy, basically.
Yeah.
And suddenly, you know, bang, there's a cruiser fleet. Bang, here's a bunch of archers next to your city.
But you need to get those GSs.
Yeah.
I noticed I've been getting a lot of humanitarians and artists from my invention bonus lately, which is a bit disconcerting. I don't like hitting those guys.
Normally when you get invention, if people don't know, you should get a GS or a GB because of just the tech that come off of that gunpowder and steam power.
Unless your name's denied, then it's going to be a GH or a GA, probably.
Yeah, the game recognizes who's playing and just throws
them
denied.
Pretty much.
Getting back to our tournament just quickly, there's 0.1 star in there. Here's his strategy, which is quite different from ours as well.
It works if you don't expect it, but since you know pretty much what he likes to do every game if he can, he loves to go to the single tile island. I mean, you can get a catapult army over there, or a couple, and then it's game over. He likes to build a bank under 14 techs or something like that. If you get an even start, and that guy invests in catapult army or something in a galleon, and, okay, you finally get your bank, and then you start hammering gold, but a catapult army or two catapult armies or attacks an island and takes it, then what? I mean, what, you got a single tile island putting out gold? Great, but you don't have enough units to defend now.
From what I hear, that's not like his only strategy. That's one thing he does. He will build a horse army early. He will build some knights. That's just one of the facets of his game. He likes to manufacture money by building markets and banks.
It's under 14 deck, and you could start making tons of gold from that. But if the guy puts pressure on you, you know you're low on units if you're doing that, and that won't work out too well.
We'll see how he holds up in the rest of this tournament. All right, good stuff, guys. Signing off for the Smoothcast.
For more information about RevCast, sibling shows Polycast and Modcast, or about Polycast in general, log on to the series' official website at thepolycast.net.
Record date:
September 7th, 2013.
Civilization Revolution sound clips. Copyright Take 2 Interactive. Copyright Civilized Communication at civcom.net.